Hello and welcome to Answer Me This. Thank you for listening.
If you've just heard some ads, please know we do not control which commercials you get to hear.
But now they're done, here is an episode of Answer Me This. Hello and welcome to Answer Me This. Thank you for listening.
If you've just heard some ads, please know we do not control which commercials you get to hear.
But now they're done, here is an episode of Answer Me This.
Why, whenever I watch The Simpsons, is it Treehouse of Horror?
Answer me this, answer me this.
Do you take this woman for richer or poorer?
Answer me this, answer me this. Helen and Ollie, answer me this.
Now, I don't know whether we should be excited by this or slightly displeased, but it turns out, Helen, that Answer Me This listeners are no strangers to pooping a party.
Good!
Is that good?
We're all among friends here, aren't we? But we're all going home at an appropriate time.
Well, at least they're pooping their own parties, because this is...
Well, we're doing a big shit on the floor.
We've all been there.
That's why I don't invite you to my parties anymore. The carpet's ruined.
This is from Johnny in Lancaster, that guy you never want coming to your party, who says, in response to Katie from Christchurch's question in the last podcast, I have a foolproof way to get people to leave your party once you've had enough of them. Namely, put on a Leonard Cohen album.
Yeah.
What if it's a kind of miserablest shoegaze party? That's just getting the party started.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm Your Man is a really kicking album, actually. You could dance to that.
Was that the one where he covered Wham?
Hasn't he done an album with LMFAO?
Has he?
It's Leonard MFAO. It's a real belter.
Well, I think Johnny's got some sound advice, actually, as a footnote to this. He says, make sure it's one of Leonard Cohen's early or recent albums.
Okay.
But the ones in the late 70s and 80s are too poppy.
There we go.
Leonard Cohen fact.
Yes.
His maternal grandfather was a rabbi who wrote a 700-page thesaurus of Talmudic interpretations. Now, that is a great way to clear a dance floor.
Good point.
Just read from that.
Is there an audiobook read by Leonard Cohen?
Actually, that would be great.
Also, Mark mentioned on Facebook that his wife suggested leading everyone in a big conga out into the garden before running back in, locking the doors and turning the lights off.
That's very good.
Yeah, but then they're trapped in your garden. You need to lead them into a conga in the street.
That's true. Also, I think Kevin Bacon has discredited any notion of congas forever.
It makes me so sad that Kevin Bacon is in those EE adverts. And then when he dragged his wife in as well. I know that it's so much money being the face of a campaign, but he's Kevin Bacon. He doesn't need to. Well, here's a question from Derry from Reading, who says, Ollie, answer me this. What's the correct way to respond to someone winking at you? I think Derry doesn't give us any context.
No. If it's Anne Robinson, it's to walk off the set, isn't it? That's your cue.
Whereas if it is someone peering through your letterbox.
I think that's right. I think context is all. I'm not a big winking fan, actually, generally.
Of doing or receiving.
But either. But as a child, when it happened to me a lot more, as it does...
You were wonked at.
I was wonked at a lot, yeah. It's interesting, I remember the precise moment, more or less, where I went from thinking that winking was like a fun secret that you were sharing with a cheeky, mischievous adult who understood you, to the moment where I thought, oh, that guy's obviously a pedo.
Do you feel like...
It was probably when I was about 14, someone winked at me, I was like, oh, it's weird.
Was that the moment that you turned into a man?
Yeah, I think it probably was.
A boy.
Yeah.
It was that watershed.
That realisation that, you know, this little conspiracy of silence might actually be because they're a bit weird.
I don't think I've ever had that. I think I've always found winking quite playful. Like Doris Day would do it. She'd put her hands on her hips and go, wink, and a little bell would sound. Is this just in my imagination?
No, I think that hints at the shared intimacy that you can have with someone by winking across a room. So that's what she was trying to convey in those images, those posters, those films that you've seen. It was with the male viewer, wasn't it, that?
And also the female viewer, which it's like she's saying... You know what I mean, ladies, right?
I actually hate myself when I wink. Occasionally do it when I'm trying to flirt, and I don't know where it comes from. I'm like, I'm not a winking guy.
I'm just not
a winker.
I don't do it very much. I feel like I'm going a bit Sid James.
You're not a winker. You look like you're having a stroke.
Because Martin, it appears, can't wink without also opening his mouth in quite a gormless way. How about when I do it?
You're doing naughty seaside winking. You're not doing really...
I mean, mine needs to be accessorised with elbows.
Yeah, exactly.
Will from Newark. Helen and Ollie, answer me this. Where does the phrase hear, hear come from? And is it hear, hear as in H-E-A-R or H-E-R-E?
It's H-E-A-R.
Yeah, obviously. Because hear, hear would mean, yes, I really like your speech, come and sit on my lap, wouldn't it? That's a very odd inference.
Well, that makes a lot of sense in British Parliament.
I suppose. if it was a lap dancing institution.
It used to be hear him, because obviously all men in Parliament back in the day. Mm-hmm. And if you particularly agreed with the point, you would strenuously urge others by talking over it, going, hear him, him.
Oh, okay.
So you're expressing your approval.
You're telling people to shut up, actually.
Well, you're saying, you know, what he's got to say is
listen
well
to
worth
this
listening
guy.
To. Yeah, exactly. I think the words just got slightly lost in translation, as they so often do, and also came just to mean approval.
Well, it's just become a slur now, hasn't it? It's now just
a slur.
It's just a lot of old men slurring. They're all going,
"Rrr." Oh, right. Not a slur like a stigma or an insult.
Just like a drunk man going, "Rrr." That's the noise, isn't it?
It's like a really crappy laugh, isn't it? Them all going,
"Rrr." Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a bit like jeering as well. Yeah, you're right. But that's the English sense of humour, isn't it? You know, well done, but you're a prick is kind of what it means. Yeah. It's used instead of applause, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like someone sits down, "Hear, hear, hear." Like, because I remember when Tony Blair left and he got the round of applause, that was one of the few occasions where the House of Commons is apparently applauded.
Was it sardonic slow hand claps?
No, it was genuine, which is it's interesting, isn't it? But all the people that opposed him still admired the fact that he managed to last 10 years.
Maybe they're happy that he was leaving. Terms.
Yeah. Well, partly. Yeah. Here's a question from Eilish in Reading, who says, "My husband and I are expecting a baby in February.
Congratulations.
In a few weeks, we have the 20-week scan, which brings the inevitable question, do we want to know the gender? My husband doesn't enjoy surprises and says that he doesn't see why we wouldn't find out this information when there's no good reason not to.
Okay.
But I've come to the conclusion that leaving it to be a surprise at the birth would be much nicer. I have the fantasy movie moment in my head where my husband hands me my baby and says, it's a boy or it's a girl. The thought of not leaving it as a surprise now makes me feel upset."
Aww.
So, Helen, answer me this. Am I being unreasonable or is he being unreasonable?
I don't think either of you is being unreasonable. You're just understanding your own personality foibles.
Hmm.
What's to stop you not finding out, but he can find out and not tell you?
That will not hold.
Some people it holds.
Does it?
Maybe.
For months
afterwards?
Maybe I'm
thinking of sitcoms, so I don't know.
It's got to, in the end, it's got to crack. Because also, if you're decking out a nursery and one of you knows the gender and the other one doesn't, it's going to affect purchases, isn't it? It's going to, even if he is not intending it, he might do an inadvertent spoiler. And I think that is going to create a situation.
Well, Eilish, I think personally, were I to have a child and the option was there, I think I'd find it hard to resist knowing. And I think it's partly so that if I didn't know, I didn't start hoping for one and then I would be disappointed if it was the other one.
Mm.
However, I think in this case, you're carrying the child. You can change your mind at a later date, but if you both find out now, then you'll never be able to get this surprise movie moment
true.
In your head. But so your husband may not like surprises. There are going to be shitloads of surprises when you have the child. I think maybe he needs to go with your feelings on this, since you're the one who's going to have a torn perineum. Surprise!
That's a surprise he can enjoy.
Yeah.
You've got a question, then email your question to answermethispodcast@googlemail.com. 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 Answermethispodcast@googlemail.com.
So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's a question from Kev from Preston in Lancashire. Kev says, "Many years ago, I auditioned to take part in Pat Sharp's Funhouse with my sister."
Already, this is a great email.
Yeah. "We got through!
Yes!
Wow.
And made it to the show!
Yes!
What do you have to do to audition for Funhouse, I wonder?"
I bet they made the kids feel that the production team were assessing their skills at climbing up ladders and diving into ball ponds, but I bet in reality they were assessing whether or not they were ugly.
Yeah, or whether they were going to puke if they went down a slide.
Or whether their parents were, like, really awkward and were going to make things difficult for the production.
Funhouse was an amazing show, wasn't
it?
It was a brilliant show. And for anyone under 20, it was a bit like Finders Keepers with Neil Buchanan.
What? I mean, put it in language that a lot of our listeners will understand.
It was well win it in a big ball pond.
It was a bit like a very elaborate multi-stage ball pond, yeah. And there were sexy twins.
There were sexy twins.
Is it Melinda and Melinda or something like that?
Isn't that Woody Allen film?
Yes. Anyway, Kev's email gets even better. He says, long story short.
Why? Why? Tell us the whole story.
Yeah, tell us about
Martin
the ball
wants
ball.
All the details. Actually, now, Martin, you don't normally go for this retro nostalgia beat.
I really enjoyed that game as a kid. I thought it was amazing.
It was a great TV show.
Yeah, it was so
genuine enthusiasm coming out of Martin.
It was so exciting and imaginative.
It was exciting,
and colourful.
But it was the same every week. So if you never saw the show, kids, what it was every week there was a giant obstacle course, a bit like in Total Wipeout. It included a Grand Prix for kids where they were going around in go-karts, yeah, and then there was like a zip wire, and it was full on, basically.
It was very multicoloured.
Very
as well.
Physically active, mm-hmm. But there was also some intellectual skill involved as well.
It was like Krypton Factor for kids.
It was, yeah.
And
it
without the flight simulator.
And the children in the audience were going mental.
The final round was amazing. It was like kids passing through the digestive system of a garish robot.
With sexy twins. Yeah. Well, remember when Kev said, long story short?
Yes,
we've just ruined that. Kev's story, short, he says, we ended up winning the show.
Good God.
Wow.
And walking away with some cool prizes.
Well done.
Including a cuddly toy.
Very good. A crucial difference between the US version and the UK version. In the US, they won money. In the UK, there is a law that says children cannot win money in game shows.
The Americans could have bought cuddly toys with the money.
Yeah, they could have, yeah. And in the UK, they could have sold their Game Boys, couldn't they?
Kev says, we had so much fun.
I'm good. Lived up to his name.
And we loved watching the show back live on CITV after school.
That was amazing.
The playground kudos of that is extraordinary.
The trouble is, says Kev, as I'm now 26, my old school friends from back then have drifted away. And I now have new friends and work colleagues to socialise with in my spare time. A few months ago, one of my colleagues spotted me on the show as they are now repeated on Challenge TV.
That's amazing.
Ever since then, it has been nothing but questions. Where is the jacket you got to keep?
Got to keep the jacket?
How tall is Pat Sharp minus the mullet? Well, he doesn't have the mullet anymore, so you can probably tell. Did you enjoy it? Of course!
Yeah.
Was it fun? Of course!
Yes.
Are a few of those questions that Kev is bombarded with.
Mm.
Answer me this. How can I politely tell them to forget about it as that was then? This is now.
Well, it's recent to them, isn't it? To the viewers of Challenge TV, this is new material. This is new episode of Funhouse they haven't seen before.
Well, also, even though it might not be new to them, they might realise it's 20-odd years ago. It might have struck a chord in their childhoods as something that they would have longed to do and didn't get to do, and they want to know all about it. It's kind of innocent, isn't it?
It's also hilarious to see someone that you know as an adult doing something faintly embarrassing as a child.
Yeah, I don't think I'd recognise any of my adult friends in their child incarnations on television, in 80s and 90s style, moreover. But there is a reason why it's not an easy memory for Kev to relive, because he says, what makes things worse is that my dad passed away shortly after the show, and that's all I think about when they ask me about it. So you can imagine they are good memories, but not nice to relive. Please help.
Well, okay, I can imagine that, and that is unfortunate, but it's also not the fault of people seeing you on... They're not going to know that, are they?
It's not in the end credits.
You could kill the conversation, though, immediately by saying, well, my dad died shortly after that, so I'd rather not talk about it, but that would make you a bit of a dick, actually.
You could. Maybe the thing to do is to write a very comprehensive blog post with screen grabs from the episodes and just get everything out the way. And so when people...
The Anthony Weiner technique. Say your piece and then you can't, you know, then when people ask you about the future, you can say, well, I've dealt with those questions.
Yeah. I think say to them, well, I've written about it on my website. Why don't you go and have a look? And on your website, you can say it's not an entirely happy memory to plunder because of this, you know, huge personal thing that happened to me around the same time.
Mm.
I think recounting the experiences might be cathartic for you, and also it would save you having this conversation again and again. But I don't think there's any graceful way to cut down people's genuine enthusiasm.
No. I mean, if people like Martin can be moved to genuine fervour, not knowing we're about to have a question about Funhouse.
Martin, the most miserable man in the world.
Someone who doesn't watch quiz shows on TV now for adults.
Someone who seems to hate fun in all its forms.
I like it if it's in the house.
You know, I think that's a genuine reaction, and you're right. I don't think there's much you can do about that. It's real nostalgia happening.
And also, I think you would get a lot of hits from people who don't even know you, because people are fascinated by this stuff.
Mm.
But, Kev, if you're fed up with this... Just imagine how Pat Sharp feels.
No, in fact, Pat Sharp has only just very recently started going on the corporate/Christmas party market.
Really?
With a adult Funhouse. You can book him and the twins, and you can book them for your Christmas party.
So he will Bring an adult-sized ball pond.
No, it says here very clearly on the website, please note we do not bring the actual fun house as it is in a skip somewhere.
Oh,
nor do we have the fun carts because we lost our licences.
They're joking though, right?
They are joking. Yeah, That's their funny way of saying, don't be ridiculous, you're not going to give us a grand and then we're going to turn up with an ITV set.
That is very upsetting imagery.
But presumably they turn up with a mic and a speaker and they do lose
And the
games.
Song. They do the song. Everyone sings
Surely
the song.
Surely they do the song, yeah. I mean, the song's one of the, and that is one of the tragedies of Jim Will Fix It, actually. And I know in the grand scheme of Operation U-Tree, it's a minor tragedy. But I think the fact that you can never again sing the joyous Jim Will Fix It theme tune, it's just brilliant, isn't it?
The whole concept of that show is really nice.
Yeah, I thought they would bring it back a few years ago, and now obviously they never will.
No, they can't, yeah.
A friend of mine started an online rumour a few months ago that I'd been on an episode of Nightmare.
Why did they start such a...
I think they wanted
rumor.
To really, really hurt my feelings because it made me really sad that I've never been on an episode of Nightmare. I would have loved to have been on an episode of Nightmare because Nightmare was brilliant.
It's sort of sad, isn't it, that our generation is just so infantilised we never grow out of these things.
But yeah, it's okay to be nostalgic about something.
I had such a happy time earlier this year, listeners, when I discovered some series of Davina McCall-era Street Mate on the Channel 4 website. And that really holds up, not visually, because late 90s hair and clothes and particularly shoes were awful. Like, men would wear shiny suits on dates with flip-flops. And the girls all had these weird skunk stripes and, like, long denim A-line skirts and flip-flops. Mm. You see the theme. But it's just quite sweet and fun. And even though the cameramen were always trying to get boobs and bum shots in as people were preparing to go on dates, it seemed like quite an innocent and good-hearted enterprise.
It would be a lot more intrusive now, wouldn't it? There'd be a camera in the bedroom, probably.
Well, also then, this was pre-Big Brother, and people just weren't accustomed to appearing on screen. So there's something quite sweet and innocent about the way they treat it. They don't play
a character.
Exactly, they don't put it on for the cameras.
Yeah.
And Davina, she was a real delight.
Maybe we should all just watch old stuff and not watch any new TV at all.
Oh, the past was a better country, wasn't it?
God, we're getting to that stage,
I don't really believe that.
But when it comes to TV shows, maybe.
Sometimes.
What's the big deal about Breaking Bad? Why not just watch Street Mate?
They're not really in the same genre.
No, they're not.
What's your favourite question from our first 3 years that's really made you guffaw?
Tim Curry or Tim Rice?
Disposing of dead mice.
Dave from Smethwick on kosher law.
If you like fact or bawdy talk.
Or just a soundtrack for your walk.
We've got stuff to entertain you.
Because for 79 pence each you can buy our first 3 years episodes.
Or just the good ones, who could blame you?
Go to answermethispodcast.com/classic or iTunes.
And if you don't, you'll get a visit in the night from our band of
hired goons, whack, whack, whack to what they say, if you value your knees.
Listeners, if you want to ask us questions in your own voices, it's very easy. All you need to do is dial the following number.
02081235877.
And then open your mouths and then think about the question you're going to ask and let the words come onto your tongue and out into your telephone receiver.
Or if you're Skyping, answer me this.
Into your smartphone or microphone.
Computational microphone.
Yeah.
Options. Lots of options.
That's right, yeah.
Let's see who has managed that feat this week.
Jackson Leeds. Helen and I, answer this. Is there any relation between the Bob and the disgusting liquor and Bob and the beautiful biscuit?
The name Bourbon in both cases is after the French Bourbon dynasty.
Oh, right.
But they're not linked, the substances. So the Bourbon booze... That was debatably called after the Bourbon County of Kentucky, where a lot of it was made, or after Bourbon Street in New Orleans. Bourbon biscuits were invented by Peak Freins in 1910, a Bermondsey-based company. So they didn't have anything to do with the Kentucky Bourbon or Louisiana Bourbon. The Bourbon biscuits were originally called Criollas, and they changed them to Bourbon as a tribute to the French dynasty.
Amazing, isn't it, how making anything French makes it seem posh?
Yes, I think they did think it was posh, and they already had Garibaldi biscuits, which they've been making since the 1860s and named them after General Garibaldi, because that seemed pretty posh. So maybe they thought...
Such an English thing, and it's like, oh, a taste of the Mediterranean.
Well, these Criollas aren't selling that well. Maybe we'd shift a few more units if people thought they were posh, like our Garibaldis seem posh, even though they're very dry. I do like a Garibaldi biscuit, but not a Bourbon. Very dry.
I wonder if there's any connection as well with the word bonbon.
No.
Sounds a bit like it.
Well, it's got the word bon in it. Is there any connection with John Bon Jovi?
Maybe.
Hello, this is Joe in Seattle. And, you know, this might make sense to to normal people under normal circumstances, but to be completely honest, I hit my head really hard a few hours ago. And then I had a couple of beers, and unfortunately, the symptoms of drunk and the symptoms of concussion are the same. So I don't know. I don't know how I'm doing. So, maybe this would make sense to you folks. So, Helen and Ollie, answer me this: what the fuck is Bud Light Platinum? Is this like a terrible beer that I can drink and like earn air miles at the same time or something?
What was that about air miles? Is that the concussion?
No, I think he's making a joke because Bud Light Platinum sounds like, I don't know, American Express Platinum, where you'd get bonus points for doing a certain thing. We don't have this product, Joe, over here.
Do we not?
No.
Is Bud Light a low alcohol one?
It's lower alcohol, lighter beer, heavily carbonated, not that nice.
Is that why it's lighter? Just it's got more air in it?
Well, the thing is, if you want something like that, you could get a Corona, which is nicer. Mm. I think in America, they just have all these light beers because, I don't know, their taste is so different. I mean, and like, actually the taste for branding is different as well. I mean, imagine having Old Speckled Hen Platinum.
Just ridiculous, it's the wrong metal, isn't it? You'd have Old Speckled Hen balsa wood or something, wouldn't you?
Exactly. So I'd never heard of this beer, but apparently Bud Light Platinum is triple filtered with a smooth finish and a top shelf taste.
What does that mean? Top shelf finish means it's got big jugs.
Yeah, it suggests, Joe, that you should only get drunk whilst leafing through old pornography. But
that's an option. It's not going to make you that drunk, is it? If it's light, it's not going to make you belch.
Okay.
The bubbles.
So, yes, it's light. Basically, it's the Pepsi Max of beer. I think they probably felt that Bud Light was being consumed by too many women to be seen as a beer that men were going to buy.
Oh, so they thought, let's add a precious metal. That'll make it manly.
It's got 2% more alcohol than Bud Light. It's got Justin Timberlake as its creative director.
Oh, no!
Justin Timberlake's career is hilarious.
Hey, let's download the Bud Light Platinum for MySpace, guys.
He doesn't get out of bed unless someone is shoving money into his face, does he, basically?
Such lavishous little prick, isn't he?
But I would be the creative director of Bud Light Platinum if they asked, I think, for Timberlake sums. Would you not?
Anything that Timberlake touches, I can't go near giving his...
The halitosis thing.
I've kind of got over my feeling that Justin Timberlake must have halitosis, but I just think he's loathsome in all other ways.
It's like halfway between Bud and Bud Light with a manly spin. That's what they're going for.
I just think the name is a mistake. I think bringing platinum into it is a mistake.
What metal would you choose?
Tin?
Yeah.
I don't think you'd call it a metal. You'd call it something manly like Hammer Party.
Or Bud Light Lawnmower.
Yeah.
What about Bud Less Light? Bud Light-ish.
Bud Just Light Enough. Bud so it's not like you're gay or anything.
Bud Light Years. Guys, are we going to run into trouble with Pixar if we call something Bud Lightyear? Yeah, probably. All right, platinum, fine.
Helen, Oliver, though life is full of questions, there are answers you must know. One, no, it will not fall off, but moderation in all things. Two, yes, there probably is, but we won't find out in our lifetimes. Three, most people prefer Connery, but my personal favourite is Dalton. Four, if you try and slip a one, it would ruin your friendship. Yes.
Here's a question from Patrick from Cork, who says, whilst watching hit American show Scandal...
Never seen it. You seen it?
Yes.
What's it about?
It's about a lady who kind of quashes scandals that the American president and his associates get into in Washington, D.C.
Oh, so she's like a spin doctor.
She's more like a cleaner-upper of disgrace.
Like a fixer.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's like a fixer. But the thing is, everyone raves about Scandal. I just haven't been able to get into it. I've tried 1.5 series. I'm just not that bothered.
A good test.
That's quite a lot.
That's more than I did of The Wire, and I was happy to dismiss that against the tide.
I've given it a good go, I think, and there are a lot of elements that are good about it, but I just don't care about what happens to any of them.
Okay, thanks for the briefing.
No problem. Patrick from Cork has been watching hit show Scandal, in which the fictional president got shot.
Oh, well, there's a spoiler.
Well, he's fictional, though. No.
That's still what happens.
Yeah, but
I'm going to watch it now.
Most American shows in which a president features heavily...
They're going to get shot. Someone's going to try and shoot them.
Yeah, or they're going to try and bring down Air Force One.
Yeah.
We know the form.
Fair enough.
Ollie, answer me this. If the president and the vice president got shot, who would run the USA? And if some flamboyant Bond villain blew up Congress and killed all the cabinet, who would then become the president? Or would there be none?
Well, under ordinary circumstances, the succession goes president, vice president, speaker of the house, and then president pro tempore of the Senate.
What's that?
I've absolutely no idea. Something posh in Latin, but someone from the Senate. Even if you killed all the cabinet, which is what Patrick is hypothesizing, the speaker of the house is not in the cabinet.
Ooh.
And the president pro tempore of the Senate is not in the cabinet. And that was deliberate. That was done by Harry Truman, because it used to be that the cabinet would then be the next person up. And that was done so that, effectively, the president can't choose their own successor. So it's to try and stop corruption, essentially.
And also, is it the case that whilst the president and the vice president might often be together, and therefore a single target, they're not often all four going to be together, you know, the president pro tempore or whatever it was.
But I'd imagine nowadays, anyway, the onus would be on whomever then became president. If they weren't the vice... I mean, if they're the vice president, fair enough, they get to be president. That's the whole point of that job.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't the vice president, if it was either the Speaker of the House or the president pro tempore of the Senate...
You're not going to stay president for long, are you?
You're not going to stay...
just a placeholder.
Diplomatically, you would surely have to call an election pretty sharpish. You'd, at the very least, have to get the permission of your party to be the leader of the party, never mind the country. So I can imagine someone coming in for a year and saying, look, I'll do this for a year, but then we're going to have an election and you can judge how I'm doing. The American people aren't going to like it very much if you're just there and no one voted for you.
Well, no, they wouldn't think it meritocratic.
Indeed.
But we've got a special circumstance at the moment, because if for some reason President Obama was indisposed, let's not talk about him being killed, but if he was indisposed, who would object to Michelle Obama stepping up and going, it's all right, guys, I've got this? Who doesn't love Michelle Obama? And who doesn't feel a bit better when she's... standing in front of people, smiling beatifically
and looking
like she's got a little joke running in her head.
I get all that, but I would object if I was an American citizen to that, because she's not a politician that I voted for.
Want an elected representative ordering drone strikes, not some random woman.
Well, it is interesting the way that the presidential style has influenced our thinking now. So at the party political conferences, which we've just had, you know, the focus is all about what Samantha Cameron wearing.
And,
you know, Nick Clegg's wife, whatever her name is.
She's sexist.
Miriam Gonzalez.
Miriam Gonzalez.
But she's busy. Is she even there?
She was there, she was at the conference, and there was the focus on what she's wearing. And A,
she's
that's
a very
demeaning
intelligent
anyway,
woman.
Because exactly, she has a powerful job. But B, that's not her job. Her job is not to be a politician's wife, she just happens to be one.
Justine Miliband as well. She looks like she's got plenty of other stuff going on.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, her dress, it was £250. Yeah. Ooh,
it's weird, isn't it? But that's because of Michelle Obama, isn't it? That's because that's what people say around, but we don't have that system. They're not supposed to, you're not supposed to vote for someone based on their wife.
Well, they said that.
Because Nick Clegg would be prime minister if you did.
People even talked about Cherie Blair's clothes, and she was not particularly well presented. So it's not a Michelle Obama thing, it predates that.
But anyway, I said that this would apply in non-extraordinary circumstances. Extraordinary circumstances in which this may not apply.
Like in Independence Day, where all of the Eastern Seaboard pretty much been whacked.
Yeah, right. Well, exactly. Well, in that scenario, I think the army would probably take control in that situation, would they not? Yeah, afraid so, Helen. You're saying, oh no, now you'd probably be grateful when aliens are invading and blowing up all the cities. But I was.
It's just a very different job, though, being in the army and being the president.
Yes, although you could argue that being chief lieutenant of the army is not that different. Like, it's still a role of responsibility to ensure law and order, isn't it?
Yeah, but you've got to govern a country which is composed of half women rather than the army, which isn't.
Yeah, okay. But again, it would be a temporary measure, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's that.
Right.
But the issue that I was talking about that is extraordinary is if the president and vice president are both elect, they've both just been elected. So the current president has no power, but they have this system where the president's there for 3 months, right?
Right. So you've got this window where the election's in November and they're not fully installed until January.
Correct.
That window. So
that
like
window.
If say there was a Christmas apocalypse.
Yes.
Right.
That's the problem. If Obama and Biden both got killed between Obama being elected and George W. Bush stepping down as president,
right,
there is no protocol. There's no one's quite sure what would happen if
George W. Bush would stick around for a few more months.
Well, no, because he's not elected. He's lost the mandate. What it says
but at least he's got some experience of the job. No matter what you think of the way he did it.
Well, what it says is in the 20th Amendment, apparently, it says Congress may by law provide for the case wherein neither a president-elect nor a vice-president shall have qualified. And presumably... still breathing is one of the things that would qualify you. So they've sort of drafted the possibility there might be some reason why the elected people are not appropriate for the job, and then Congress can decide. But what they don't do is tell you what Congress should do. So there'd be a hell of a debate then.
Yep.
And they probably would say, let's keep the old guy on. But that would be pretty controversial, wouldn't it, if you just elected a different party?
But then we'll just call another election.
I suppose that's what they do. But then who's the president in that time? Exactly.
It would have to be George Bush.
I guess he'd have to carry on with George W. Bush. Yeah.
It's got to be Michelle Obama.
know, just get the new guy's wife in. Yeah. She seems nice.
Well, you know what would also be nice? Not as nice as Michelle Obama, but pretty nice, is if you sent us some questions, listeners.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is nice. That's as nice as we can get in the UK.
So all of our contact details are on our website,
answermethispodcast.com. And whilst you're there, click the button that allows you to join up to our love film trial for two reasons, really. One is because by doing so, we get a little bit of money from our friends at Love Film. I'm not going to pretend that there's any other reason we're excited about it.
Well, I'm excited because it means you can just waste away all of your time streaming films and TV series.
Well, exactly. The other legitimate reason for you to be excited is because you get access to Love Film Instant for a whole month on your iPad or your PC or your Mac or whatever, and you don't have to pay anything for that month-long free trial. You can watch as much as you like during that time. And new for October on Love Film Instant, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. We both agreed 3 stars on that one.
Yes. It's a flawed 4-star, really, isn't it?
It is,
Welcome to Helen and Ollie's film review.
It's a 3 stars with aspiration, that. Worth a watch.
You can go back to the podcast last year in which we gave a fuller review of The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
I Give It a Year is on there. That's the one with Rafe Spall pretending to be Hugh Grant, isn't it? I heard bad, but again, I'm intrigued and I want to see it.
That looks like a great plane film. And I do feel like Love Film is a bit like having constant seat-back entertainment,
yeah,
which is why I love it.
And in fact, there's a great box set on there. This we can vouch for. Ugly Betty, series 1 to 4 on there.
I can only vouch for series 1, but that was a very enjoyable series.
Yeah, sure. I'm not pretending I stuck the whole course, but what I'm saying is there's at least 10 hours of entertainment there that you'd want to check out.
Yeah, and what else are you going to be doing in the glumness that is October?
Exactly.
Watch leaves fall off the trees?
So do that. Give us some money, get some free entertainment.
And if you're feeling altruistic, you could buy Martin's latest long player, which is a charity album raising funds for Arts Emergency. Martin, what's the name of the album?
It's called Kill It With Fire.
It's a concept album, isn't it?
It's a concept album. It's a magic realist, socialist, feminist adventure.
But don't let that put you off. You can buy it from...
existentialmeltdown.bandcamp.com.
Super.
It's incredible. He's like a parody of himself, folks.
And we shall see you next week, listeners.
Bye! Bye.